Today is October, what is it, 5th. This is going up on October 5th. This is episode number 557, the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, and I keep notes here, hate moving. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/context machine, which will take you directly to our Facebook group, assuming that Facebook is back up by the time you hear this. Because as we're recording, Facebook is not up. Now, I have an unusual lineup for today's show, as I'm joined by two people, neither of whom is on ACM very often. Now, first is my very good friend, Jim Dalrymple, founder of The Loop, and with a long resume before that, too. Jim, welcome.
Hey. Thanks, good to be here.
Thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it. And of course, I also have my business partner and co-founder here of the Mac Observer and the co-host of the Mac Geek Gab, Dave Hamilton.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here. Yeah.
Thanks for you both being here. I mean, like, today is interesting. I mean, it is both, like, I don't know, it's sad, it's triumphant, poignant. It's interesting to me, at least, the reason that brings us here. And that is, of course, this on Tuesday the 5th is the 10th anniversary of the passing of Steve Jobs from this life onto whatever comes next. And so I thought that what we would do is we would talk about talk about Apple today. Like, what is Apple today? Where is Apple today? What's different about Apple today? Let me just kick that off too. So, one of the very first things that Tim Cook said when stepping up into the official CEO role, as opposed to the de facto and interim CEO role, was that nothing was going to change. Right? You guys remember that?
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. That's a smart thing to say when you're, you know, balancing the temperament of Wall Street with your every word, right?
Like, that's, yeah.
It's not what happened.
It's not,
that's what, not happened. What happened. No, but that's what you say.
That is what you say.
Yeah.
He had to say that.
One of the very first things that changed was the fact that Apple started matching employee charity bonuses, charity donations.
Yeah.
That was a change.
Overall, looking, 30,000 foot view of Apple, they've become more socially responsible than what they've ever been. And, I think a lot of people certainly appreciate that because of the power that Apple has, the finances that Apple has. But, there were some people in Wall Street that didn't like that much because they're all about money. But, I think
also overall, some people in politics that didn't like that because,
yeah,
for a variety of reasons.
I wonder
Social responsibility is one of the big things that changed. Not that they weren't before. I think they just became more open about it.
I think that's right. Yeah, even, Steve Jobs was notorious for being a charitable person and yet extremely private about which charities and how he participated in them for the most part. And that spilled over to Apple too, right? That mindset sort of infused the way Apple did things. But that was 10 years ago. The world has gotten more socially aware, and the demands that the world in general imposes on people and companies have gone up tenfold in 10 years. So I wonder definitely Tim Cook made that change early on, but I wonder if by now that change would have happened either way, regardless of who the CEO of Apple was, whether it be Tim Cook or Steve Jobs or somebody else.
Some interchange, probably, right?
Probably. I mean, yeah, we don't have a control group to compare against, obviously, right? We don't right. Have, we the parallel universe would be super helpful right now. Yeah.
So interesting. Oh, so interesting. The social media is a lot of what you're talking about. But I would also even say that under Tim Cook's leadership, Apple also played a role in that process you just described.
That's fair. Yeah, he definitely put them ahead of the curve on that. That and privacy, which I'm sure is something we're going to talk about as well.
And the environment.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
like all of the investments that Apple has done in other parts of the world, you know, helping its suppliers meet standards that they are not required to meet by local law and regulation. That's hugely significant. And very few people, even in the Mac press, the Apple press, talk about it, but certainly not in the mainstream press. Apple doesn't get anywhere near enough credit for that.
Well, let's not forget that it was Steve who started recognizing the environmental impact, because during some of the investor meetings that they would have, the shareholder meetings, some shareholder would stand up, you know, from Greenpeace or, you know, one of the environmental things and say something to Steve during the meeting. And Steve would say, well, here's what we're doing. And he would have it all, you know, all the stuff. And the guy would just say, oh, well, I didn't know that. Yeah. Because that they didn't have, you know, the big reports. Maybe towards the end they did, you know, where they were doing things, whereas now they're more open about it. Again, you know, it's just, it's part of the way that he ran the company.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Well, go ahead, Dave.
Well, they've walked the walk on a lot of this stuff even prior to Tim Cook being there. The privacy, security, and I realize I'm putting the cart in front of the horse here and summarizing things we haven't even talked about, but, you know, privacy, security, social responsibility, environmental impact and awareness and all that stuff. They'd walk the walk on that stuff for a long time. It's part of Apple's corporate culture, but they had never talked the talk about it. And that's one thing that Tim Cook, you know, the Apple under Tim Cook has very much changed. They are like, I mean, you know, all of the stuff, they're way out in front of it, and they can back it up because it's always been there. So that's an interesting leadership change to me, that messaging. PR had to change with Steve not being there, because he wasn't there to run PR anymore, or, you know, influenced PR the way he did.
Yeah. And Katie Cotton left too.
Fair. And that's true. I mean, yeah, they were a duo on that. They were, that's right,
an absolute partnership there.
Yep. Yep.
All right. So here is one of the big areas where I think Apple has changed. And I do not think I've got two different angles that I'm going to take on this, but I'm going to start at the effect. And the effect is that Apple appears to be less focused on the tiny details that we don't notice until they're shown to us. And I, because that was Steve's singular gift.
Silence. Do you have an example of this? I mean, yeah, I tend to agree with you in general, but it might be easier to dig in.
In general, there's a lot of little things that seem to get released into the world now that I do not think would have been released to the world if Steve was still basically obsessing over details. And I don't think it could be any other way, because again, I believe that was Steve's singular focus. Steve was the one who noticed the little thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. There is certainly an aspect of that is part and parcel with Apple. And certainly that was a lot of stuff that was Johnny Ive that survives Johnny Ive's departure from Apple. But there are details, especially, I think, in the software, where there are just some rough edges that wouldn't have been there once upon a time. Wow, silence. Well,
yeah. Rough edges in hardware?
Yeah, rough edges in hardware and software.
Well, I think that's, it's a little bit unfair because there were a lot of rough edges, in different things while he was there too. I mean, software that, when you installed a software update, it would wipe out your home folder. Yeah. You know, that's a rough edge.
that so, is yeah. fair.
Objectively rough. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot has to be taken into account the way that the technology has changed and the things that Apple is trying to bring to the table these days, the ease of use that they've always been famous for, is very difficult to do. And yes, there are some rough edges around it. Yes, we as a group, as users, we all, you know, lambaste Apple when these rough edges come up, but it's only because we don't expect these things not to work. And if I could elaborate a bit on that, I think if you look back to how things were done before to, and in comparison to maybe how they're done now, things were simple, but remember iPhoto. Steve introduced iPhoto as being a digital shoebox. And that is exactly what it was. It was no more than a place that would hold all of your photos. That was it. It didn't do anything. But over time, Apple started putting more features and more features in there. And then it became more of a useful app where you could edit and you could do all these, but it took time. He would release the simplest of things to show that it could be done and then build on it. Maybe these days we're just trying to do too much too soon.
He was, you know, Apple under Steve and definitely at Steve's direction were the masters of the MVP, right? The minimum viable product. We always used to say that Apple has had, and we could still argue this in some ways today, a startup mentality. And that's the mentality when you are doing a startup with really anything, but certainly hardware and software, is you have to set the bar somewhere and say, okay, this is the minimum viable product, the thing that we can go to market with and have success, have people understand what we're doing, have people feel like it is a complete offering, even though there might be more, it stands on its own as this minimum viable product. And that was a frustrating thing for many of us who were nerds and wanted, but wouldn't it be better if you just added one more thing? And to your point, Jim, they eventually would add things to this and expand, but it was always this very calculated, measured, slow process so that when it came out, it preserved a positive user experience. You know, having it work was more important than having it be full of bells and whistles. And I think that very much still is Apple's mentality. Although there are times now when I think that isn't held to quite as firmly as it might have been in the past.
That's all fair. However, we're not addressing the core issue under my original point, and so I'm going to articulate it slightly differently. Steve Jobs was a person who had this unique ability to notice, like, the, you know, we used to call it the 5%, but I don't even know if that was accurate, but notice that tiny percentage of things that other engineers and designers don't notice. And then he would, you know, tell people that they were bozos or whatever and tell them to fix it. And you know, and it wouldn't get released until those things were fixed. And when you take that person out of the equation, it's going to have an effect on how the company is producing products. And to me, that lack of, I don't know, call it finesse, is often evident. But again, I don't think it could be any other way, because you just had this, person with this weird ability to obsess over these little things that the rest of us wouldn't even notice. Do y'all not feel that way?
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, there's part of the difficulty in talking about Steve, and it's one of the reasons why I, you know, for the last 10 years, I probably haven't really talked about Steve, because a lot of people say, oh, Steve never would have done that. Well, you don't know that. No, I mean,
you can't know that. That's right. Yeah.
You know, Steve made a lot of mistakes, but that's how he became so successful too. I mean, you know, you can't definitively say, well, he would have or he wouldn't have, because you don't know. The fact is, Apple is more successful now financially than what it was before. Did, you know, Steve change the world with the products? Yes, absolutely. And they're continuing that. But
okay, but I am in no way comparing Tim Cook to Steve Ballmer, but Microsoft was vastly more profitable under Steve Ballmer than under Bill Gates. That in and of itself is not necessarily a marker of quality.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that for these people that say, oh, Steve never would have done that. And all, yeah. No, it's different. You know, Apple is successful in different ways now than what they are then. And yes, they're successful because of what Steve did. I don't know. I think his legacy and the things that he did for users around the world just cannot be compared.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. Dave?
Yeah. No, I mean, Apple won't have another Steve Jobs, nor do I think Apple could be as big a company as it is today with someone like a Steve Jobs running it. You know, the company has grown. The company has evolved. Does it still maintain awareness of and a care for those core values that Steve brought in, at least the positive ones? Yeah, for sure. Do they hit that mark the same way that they did in the past? No. Could they? I don't know, right? I mean, they're, you know, it used to be, let's take when iPhone first, you know, was being developed at Apple, and even once it was initially released, you know, Apple shifted the engineers, the software engineers from macOS, we'll call it, although the name obviously changed over the years, but, you know, from working on the software that ran the Mac to working on the software that ran the iPhone, and then they'd switch them back and forth. That doesn't happen anymore, right? Like they, and that truly is sort of startup mentality. Like, well, we just got to put our resources where we have them, as opposed to, well, we'll just hire more people. You know, we can expand, but they really couldn't. They have so much more financial freedom that they can do all of these things at the same time. And they do a lot of things at the same time. And, that tends to lose that singular focus mentality that really was part of what got them to where they needed to be initially. That's just, you know, it's a different company now, and it has evolved from that. It stands on the shoulders of that for sure. And it's obvious that it does, right, but so it's not just that.
You're dancing.
Financial freedom is an interesting way to say it. I mean, Dave, you have financial freedom. Apple is just, you know, they own the world. So
I wouldn't say that I have financial freedom, but I like your yes, the comparison. Yeah, to use the word financial freedom is underselling it a wee bit, right? But they do. They have the freedom to do what they need to do. And they, they have more money than they know how to spend.
Yeah. They actually have the money to do anything they want to do and the discipline to mostly only do what they need to do.
Right. And they're pretty good with that. Like that it's impressive that they haven't gotten involved in, it's going to sound ridiculous to anybody that that's listening to this, because we all know Apple, at least at some level, but you know, they haven't started building, you know, smart fridges and heading down that path of, well, we're going to be everything. We'll put, you know, whatever it is, you know, appliance OS in your washing machine and your fridge and like all that stuff. The OS that they have could do all that. And there's probably a good argument to be made that, well, wait, you know, if we had all of our stuff in our house running on that, wouldn't that be nice? I mean, think about it. You got your Apple TV and your HomePod and your iPhone and your Mac all sort of running the same foundation OS. Wouldn't it be great if your lights and your this and your that and like all your stuff did that? I could make an argument that that would be fantastic.
Okay. You're dancing right on the edge of the second angle that I wanted to take, and I think that's probably going to be like the meatiest part of the show. So right now I want to take a second and I want to tell you about our sponsor, and that sponsor is LinkedIn Jobs. You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. Look, hiring right now is harder than it has been. A lot of times we don't get to actually meet people face to face. We're doing a lot of remote hiring. And LinkedIn Jobs is a feature. It's a platform that you can use to find the best candidates and to manage that hiring process. So you can focus on candidates with the skills and experience you need. You can use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people. And then you can use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. The things I like the most are those tools that they give you to manage not only your job postings themselves, but also your potential candidates and the people that you are talking to for those jobs. Those tools are very easy to use. They make your job easier. I really like that. And did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's like for this podcast, that's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. I appreciate them sponsoring this episode of the Mac Observer's Apple Context Machine. Okay. So here's where you're dancing. There are some sectors out there who are like furious at Tim Cook because he's not a product guy, right? He was never a product guy. And, you know, they all want Steve Jobs the second, the people that inhabit this sector of humanity. And there were people who like wanted Elon Musk to come over, you know, to like who wished that Elon Musk had been CEO of Apple. And I would argue that going from Steve Jobs to another kind of Steve Jobs would have destroyed Apple. Because another kind of Steve Jobs would never have been content to make sure that Apple University was baked into the company.
Right.
Another kind of Steve Jobs would have wanted to change everything. And I mean, and start making, like, Elon Musk was not interested in making smartphones and I just, like, my blood boils at the illogic of wanting Elon Musk to be in charge of Apple. It doesn't make any sense. And I made this point on the stage at the Mac stock, one of the Mac stocks, that Tim Cook is pr- probably one of the only people on the planet who could have taken Apple from the shadow of Steve Jobs to being a functioning company that can continue to innovate and do new and interesting things. And that you have to have that phase after having someone like Steve Jobs running a company like Apple in order to have any kind of room for any other kind of innovative product person to end up stepping into the role of leadership.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Apple would not be well served by a product focused CEO right now, or even an overly product focused leadership team. It needs to be. I mean, they're focused on customers, and I think it's great. You know, we never heard the words customer sat out of Steve Jobs' mouth, but we hear them, you know, in many ways, including exactly like that, you know, from Tim Cook over the last 10 years.
Oh, I think Steve did talk about that. He would always crow about the numbers we would get out of their own surveys on the Apple Store, for instance.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. All right. Yeah. But Tim Cook is Apple today is far more overtly, in my opinion, in my perspective, I should say, focused on being a company that serves their customers, right? Back to what we were talking about at the beginning, even, you know, in terms of like privacy and security, like they were doing that because they knew it was right. Now they continue doing it because they know it's right. And they tell us about it because they know we know it's right. And it's a different messaging. Their PR has changed.
But it's not just about PR. And it's not even just about messaging. It's like the stability of the company had to come first. And that, you know, there were several years in which Apple was seemingly not doing a whole lot on the new product front. I think part of that might have been Apple Park. And I think that part of it, that it was all part and parcel of the need to make sure that the Apple way of doing things was baked into the company, which again was what Apple University was and is intended to do. And that you had to have that period of stability for a company like Apple to survive the passing of a founder that had as much control over the company as Steve did.
Sure.
Jimmy?
Let's not forget that we also had a lot of different operating systems that we're dealing with these days, too. As you know, if you look way back, there was basically one operating system. And then for a few years, you had three operating systems with iOS, Mac, well, really only two, iOS and Mac OS, which was first iPhone OS until the iPad came along. And then they were still the same. But there wasn't a lot of interaction between the two, you know. So in that way, things were, the product focus was more on singular products as opposed to a product line. So now it's an Apple product line of all devices communicating with every other device, communicating with all of the software. That's a lot more difficult to do, you know? So yes, having, you know, maybe this is the time where they really needed a product guy, you know, because everything is coming together in a way that is just incredibly difficult to do. I can't even imagine how difficult that is to do. But having said that, I agree that Tim was the best guy for the job when he came in and took over. I mean, clearly he's done a remarkable job since he got there. So,
yeah,
hard to argue that.
No, he's done a fantastic job. He was able to see, I mean, he started as an operations guy, right? And so he was able to see that and then expand it into this, you know, Apple is a world leader and is going to be seen that way. And he understands his stewardship role in that and making sure, and Apple's stewardship role in that too, right? And making sure that that's not only does the company function properly, like you just said, with, you know, tying all together all the product lines so that they actually interact really well. Again, that's not a new idea, but it certainly is way better implemented today than we had ever seen that in the past, right? Like Apple is succeeding with the cloud, whereas, you know, they failed miserably at the cloud many times over under Steve Jobs. They just had to keep making the mistake and learn and iterate and get it right, you know, and they stayed the course with that. But now they're here and they're this company that people look to and say, oh, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day who's like, I can't afford to be an Apple user. And all we were doing was talking about Apple Music because he said that, you know, he liked the way Google Music used to do things and they stopped and this, that, and the other thing. I said, well, you know, he's like, and I just can't do Apple. And I said, well, you can run Apple Music on other platforms. And his comment was like, yeah, but as soon as I do that, I'm going to want to start buying Apple hardware. I'm like, well, yeah.
Right? Cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, but that was the, I mean, and he's like, I can't afford to be, you know, all in on Apple. I can't, you know, and I mean, there's we'll take that as just, you know, face value. We won't argue whether or not that there's actually merit in that, but it was just an interesting thing that here's somebody who is not in the Apple world and knows how well the Apple product ecosystem works together. Like it's just, it's a known thing, even to people that aren't experiencing it. That's fantastic. And that was not the case to your point, Jim, right? Like, they worked really hard to bring everything together as one.
I think the sales in every product category indicate how successful they are, whether it's, you know, services that are up to what, 15 billion now, and you know, all the way to Macs. I remember, you know, when I was first reporting on a Mac, earnings on Apple earnings, and they made $1 million, you know, in the quarter, and everybody was stunned that Apple could make so much money. $1 million they made. What do they make that a second now? You know,
yeah, that's true. I mean, that's right.
And that was over a quarter. You know, so you know, this is back in the late 90s that I was reporting on that, and you know, wow, Apple made $1 million.
To be fair, in the late 90s, that did seem like a miracle that Apple right? that Apple could actually do that because they were in trouble. Yeah.
Now they're making what, 40, 50 billion quarter
in profits. It's a lot.
Revenue.
Oh yeah. Easily. Sure.
But in revenue back in those days, they were probably only doing, you know, in the tens of millions. Anyway,
I remember a column from West George, who wrote a column for us called The Apple Trader, and he was very obviously stock focused. And this was near the end of his writing career for us. He was concerned that Apple's sales were basically dipping down to less than $1 billion a year, and he was really concerned about the viability of the Mac with as few unit sales as Apple was having. This would have been in probably 99-ish. And things are not, things are a little bit different now.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a bit.
Yeah. Well, how many times, I mean, you know, we had the Apple death knell counter, right? You know, how many times was Apple on its doorstep, Brian? How many times was it called beleaguered, right? Like if the computers couldn't count high enough to do the latter. So we only did the former.
Yeah. So, I documented, let's see, 71 times that Apple was declared dead or dying. And there were definitely a few that I missed here and there. But they, sure. The last entry, the funny thing to me is the last entry is 2018. It wasn't that long ago that people.
Who was that?
Paul Mampilli. Paul Mampilli. I don't even know who that guy is.
Okay.
But the one before that was 2015. All right. So we did go a couple of years with that one. But I mean, even in 2015, it's like Apple was making more money anyway. It's interesting.
Yeah, they had a long runway to die on in 2018. Yeah. So,
yes, indeed, they did. To me, an interesting aspect of where Apple is today is partly where it's going. Like there was surprisingly little turnover when Steve Jobs passed away, right? In the executive ranks. Tim did a really
I think that was intentional. I think there were some golden handcuffs, many pairs of them placed around so that it wasn't Steve leaves and then so does everybody else. I think this was very, very scripted.
But I think there was participation by the executives in that. I think that they wanted to make sure that Steve's company kept on.
Fair.
Of course.
Fair. Oh, of course. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I don't think anybody was itching to leave.
Well, no, I think everyone wanted to.
There might have been one or two.
But. Everyone wanted to, like, it feels like from the outside. And Jim, I know you've got contacts with an Apple, but it felt like on the outside that everybody wanted to make sure that Steve Jobs' company survived him. And that included Tim Cook. But it also included the rest of most of the rest of the executive team.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's certainly. Yeah.
So but the question is, where does Apple go next? Because a lot of those executives have been around for a while and we have seen some retirements. You know, Phil Schiller has become an Apple fellow. He's obviously still involved in dabbling, but he's not the day-to-day marketing senior vice president anymore. Right. And he
deserved that.
Absolutely. I'm not saying he did not deserve that, but by any stretch of the imagination, but that is that's like a beginning of the moving on of the old guard. And I am confident that Tim Cook is very mindful of his own succession plan, but also the succession plan for like most of the rest of the rest of the company, the rest of the executive team in particular.
Yeah.
And I do wonder who he has or what kind of person he has picked out to succeed him. Cause I imagine that Tim Cook has a date that he plans on stepping down, that there are things that he wants to accomplish and that when he's accomplished them, he's going to be ready to step down.
I agree.
And who is that person? I do not know the answer to that. I don't even know what kind of person it is. Is it
Williams?
Williams is sort of the obvious one that they've been grooming for that in a public way. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, yeah. I cannot argue against that, but it is also hard. I mean, Jeff Williams is not a young man either.
Fair. I'm sure there is a line, and it's not just like, well, there's only one.
Yeah.
In case something were to happen to both of them, right? Like, I mean, they are, a monstrous company. They've got to have protections in place. But my guess is that barring some unexpected twist of events, that it will be Jeff Williams, and probably in the next 5 years. That's just, my speculation, and based on all, sort of the public reports and things like that. Yeah.
Do you think my thought is that there is another product that Tim wants to either release or kill that would be his dividing line?
Maybe.
Perhaps the car.
doesn't hit me as the, you know, I need for my emotional well-being to be the one that.
Oh,
I,
no.
I gotta
disagree with that a little bit. I felt like Apple Watch was very much him proving that he could bring a product to the world.
Absolutely. I think it was him proving that Apple without Steve Jobs could bring this great new product to the world.
That's more like it.
Yeah.
Right. It's not, it wasn't, it didn't, cause I mean, I think all of us were there when the Apple Watch was released. He was very proud of what was happening there. I mean, it was akin in some ways to when Jobs announced the first iPhone. Like there was definitely this, I am so happy that we are here to do this, but not, I'm so happy that I'm here to do this. It was very much, we did it. Look what we did. And that's how Tim seems to me. So I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the guy, right? So I could be reading this totally wrong. But he just doesn't come across as that kind of, I need to serve my ego person.
I didn't even mean it that way. I completely agree with you. And I didn't mean it that way. Yeah. What I meant was bringing it over to the finish line, not necessarily the accomplishment aspect. Or would it be, you know, even something like some daunting task, seeing that project through to completion, to me feels like it could be Tim's goodbye gift to the world in terms of being in charge of Apple. Jim?
Even that, like, I don't know him. I can only go on what I see in interviews and obviously the performances that Apple puts on a regular basis. But that whole my gift to the world thing that doesn't fit. That fits very much with who Steve Jobs was, for better and for worse. But it does not fit with who Tim Cook is. I really don't think he feels like he has a gift to give to the world.
Well,
he's not that egomaniac.
If anything, his gift will just be leaving Apple in the best position possible.
That's it. Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't screw it up while I was here. Right. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's underselling a little bit too. I get it, but
That's how I see Tim looking at it, because he's just not that guy. So I don't think that he feels that he has a gift. I think it's to give. I think it's more, he set, now let's say 2025, this is when I'd really like to go. And, you know, here's what we've got in the pipeline. He's not going to force anything out that, you know, may fail, or he's going to get the products out that they get out. And you know, they've got products in the pipeline up to 2025. So,
sure. Of course. Yeah. You know. No, I think the word, my word to describe Tim Cook and probably to describe who Apple would put in place as the next CEO is steward, right? Like, here is this company and it will be under the purview of a leadership team that is led by one person, you know, ostensibly. And that person, you know, I think Tim Cook sees himself as the steward of Apple. He didn't create it. He helped to build it, but he wasn't there at the beginning and he won't be there at the end. This is his to, you know, ship to steer for a while, and he needs to do his level best to do that and then hand it off to the next captain. To me, that's who he is. But can we talk about one aspect of Steve Jobs that we've danced around a little bit, Brian, and that is I miss getting to go see him on stage. And I don't just mean in person, you know, in the room. I miss seeing him perform in the same way that I miss seeing, you know, Rush, one of my favorite rock bands. Like, I know I will never go see Rush live again, and that's a bummer. And I know I will never see Steve Jobs perform again, and that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
I agree.
He was a master showman. And all the other things that we've mentioned here too, but like, he really knew how to work a room, and maybe that's my biggest understatement of this episode.
Yep. Nobody like him.
No, I'll never forget. I was on an airplane with my family going somewhere, And I had put the iPhone announcement on my iPad, you know, the video of it. And I watched it with my son, who was probably 10 at the time. And he was like, oh, he's like, wow. Like, just as we were watching it, even just like 30 minutes in, he's like, this guy really, he's like, you were there for this? And he's like, this is amazing. He's like, I've never seen anything like this. And he was 10. And I had the same sort of reaction. I taught a college class last semester. I didn't teach one this semester because I didn't want to be teaching on Zoom with COVID and all of that stuff. But I taught the business of podcasting at the University of New Hampshire last semester. And it was part of the business program. And they really encouraged me to sort of tell my own story within the context of this class that we'd put together. And so I would, you know, do things and tell them about stuff that I had done and, you know, things that like my career had afforded me. I thought the one that would blow everybody away was that I got to, you know, have a tour of Abbey Road Studios by Giles Martin. Like, I thought that was a pretty cool thing. That was a cool thing to me. They could have cared less. One day I just happened to mention in passing, oh yeah, you know, and so I was, you know, I was there for the original iPhone announcement, and you could have heard a pin drop in the room. Everybody wanted that story told. And it was like, oh, right. Got it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Like, that's what resonates with, you know, 20 somethings today. Or it's just that, like,
that is their Abbey Road.
That's their Abbey Road. That's correct. That's really fair. That's right. Yeah, that's right. And it was cool. Like, you knew it in the moment. You certainly knew it after the fact, but it was, you know, that was a special performance that day. Really, like, just, he knocked it out of the park. And he knew it too. Like, he knew it while it was happening. That was the best part. He was in the zone. Yeah. Yeah. So I missed that. I was going to say, I'm going to miss that. I've already missed it for 10 years. Yeah. We don't get that anymore. We get good shows from Apple. I love what they've been doing, you know, with their well-produced online events. I hate calling them virtual. They're events. They're just produced and online. They're shows, but they've been doing those have been some of the best shows Apple has ever put on, but it's not Steve Jobs and it never will be, but I don't go in with that expectation, and that's okay.
It's interesting that the events that Apple's put on are so theatrical, you know, with things, cameras flying through the air and down into the pool and into the underground, you know, like to a secret laboratory and stuff. And they've had a lot of fun with it. And I think, you know, beyond the live events that they're obviously so good at, being able to have fun with these events in those kind of secret lab situations, I think is very cool.
I agree. Yeah, no, theatrical is a fantastic word to use. I mean, it is. They are putting together and producing shows, right? And they have shown a level of skill in that department that we have never seen before.
Adaptability
with Steve or without, right? I mean, it's just been spectacular. What they've done. And in many ways, I like them better than the live events. I miss many things about the live events, right? But like, not having to wait for applause and not having some demo machine kind of, you know, like, well, that didn't work the way it was supposed to. Hey, pause. Let's vamp for a moment. Stretch, you know. It's nice to have that. Things keep moving along because obviously it's pre-recorded. Like, it's going to be exactly. Yeah, but I love it. I think it's been great.
We'd be able to accept it if we could actually just be there in person again.
I don't know. I kind of like where it is. I really do. And then when it's all over, you know, I just go and make myself a fresh cup of coffee, go sit outside.
You know? I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. My son had another thing. I think it was about, I don't know. It was before he saw the video of the aforementioned video I mentioned, but I was heading out. We were all getting ready one morning. The kids were getting ready for school. I was getting ready to go to the airport because I live on the East Coast of the United States. And I was getting ready to go to the airport to fly to whatever, San Francisco probably, and go see, you know, some Apple event the next day. And I was moaning about how, you know, I got to waste 3 days of my life for a 90-minute event and this, that, and the other thing. And my son stopped me and he's like, Dad, let me just ask you, he's like, how many people are going to be there tomorrow? And this was at the Yerba Buena Center. So it was, I think it was like 200 people or something in that theater. It's not a big theater at all. And I'm like, yeah, a couple hundred people. He's like, yeah. He's like, how many people want to be there tomorrow? He's like, yeah. I want to be there. All my friends at school want to be there. And he's, and I'm like, right. And I'm like, shoot, I'm about to be schooled by a 10-year-old. And he's like, you know, it's pretty cool that you get to do this. He's like, it's not so bad. You got to be on a plane twice. You know?
That's like, such a great reminder, man.
Yeah. It's like, oh yes. I mean, talk about a reminder of privilege, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Like, oh, no,
your yeah. kid just told you what an ass you are. Just in case you didn't get.
No, I got that, Jim. Thanks.
Detailed. Yeah. Okay.
I appreciate you sharpening that point again after all these years. That was important for me. Yeah.
In case you were just thinking he was trying to be nice. No,
no,
he wasn't.
No, he was telling me I was being an ass. No, you're totally right. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. I just thought, thanks. I thought I would put that out there. You know, like you said, sharpen that edge a bit.
That's what friends are for, right?
Hey, I'm here for you.
I appreciate it.
if your kids say anything more to you that you need me to translate, just stay. Just call me.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'll make sure to put you at the top of that list. Yep.
sounds great.
Good old Jim. He's here for us.
Yes.
He's here for us. All right. Listen, I actually appreciate both of you being here for this discussion. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Me too.
Same. Yeah. Good stuff.
And it's going to be also interesting to see the various other lookbacks. I'm expecting to be disappointed by some of them.
Oh, yeah. 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 That's okay, though. I mean, everybody's entitled to an opinion, right, Jim? I think my kid said that to me once, too. Do you want to explain what that meant to me?
Well, you know, why don't we save that for next time, Dave? Because I don't want to beat you down too much in one day.
I also, before this gets any more off track, I want to thank LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. Again, that's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. I appreciate them. I appreciate you both. I have, let's see here. I've got this. I'm always Johnny on the spot. And that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on or add or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And again, Jim, tell us, please, where can we find you?
Usually in the backyard drinking a beer.
Yeah, fair.
Oh, yeah.
Online,
and at loopinsight.com and Jay Dalrymple on Twitter.
Yeah, one of my favorite sites. Not many of us left, gentlemen.
Nope.
From the old school. Dave, where can we find you?
Sometimes in the backyard drinking a beer, but uh-huh. I wish Jim and I were neighbors so that we could do that together.
Yes.
But also at, if you go to MacGeekGab.com, that's an easy place to find me, or Dave Hamilton on Twitter.
So. Mm-hmm. And you're also on the TDO sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. So anyway, I appreciate you both very, very much. Hope you have a fantastic week. And on that very happy note.